Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Back, it's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. Joan Pride is our guest. I'm glad she's here, too. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors and a longtime member of our Brain Trust and joins us every week to help us understand some of the things that are happening in our world according to Kiplinger's perspective. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Hey there, Jim. Thank you.
It's good to have you back.
Good to be back.
How much snow did you guys get this last week in Washington, D.C.?
Snow?
Yeah.
None.
You know, the white stuff. What?
None. Did you guys get snow?
You guys have had snow.
This week?
What? In the last few days, haven't you had? You've had snow.
No. No.
You had
I know that in New England they did.
Oh, I thought you guys had some like a week ago.
No. We had a little bit of sleet on Saturday night, but that's all. No snow, thank goodness.
Okay, I thought she had
it's
some
over.
Snow. Okay, well, never mind that then. By the way, Joan, did you know that Niagara Falls once ran out of water?
Really?
Yeah.
How is that possible?
There was a drought.
Ooh.
Now, if a drought happened right now and caused Niagara Falls to run out of water,
yeah,
can you imagine what that would do to the enviro-wackos? What kind of a tizzy they would work themselves into? But 1903, 104 years ago, Niagara Falls ran out of water. Now, was global warming happening then, you think?
Boy, that's a good question. I don't know. I bet you know.
No, I don't know. I'm just pointing out. You know, I don't make the news, Joan. I just read it. 1903, Niagara Falls ran out of water because
how
of
is that news?
Well, it's news because, you know, I mean, everybody's all in a tizzy about the different weather fluctuations and gyrations, and that's clearly because of global warming and all that kind of stuff. And you know, we've been having this kind of stuff for a long time.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Wow, I didn't know. Realize it was always this bad.
It was bad at one time.
Don't
you remember? You remember Joan? You remember the Dust Bowls of the 1930s, don't you?
Oh yeah, right. I was right in the middle of them.
Yeah, right there. And you were an Okie, weren't you? On the Grapes of Wrath vehicle there, weren't you?
There you go.
Hey, Joan. Another thing that I wanted to mention before we get started with the letter is an important date today.
Okay.
550 years ago, Gutenberg's press had already invented it, but he rolled off of that press the first Bible.
Wow.
And journalism was born that day. Would you agree?
Hey, I'll go for that. Sure.
See, your very profession was basically launched with that Bible. So isn't this like a red letter day for journalists?
That's pretty
too?
Cool. I wonder. You know, I'd love to know how long it took him to print that book.
I would too. But here's something. It was interesting that I read once, and I wish I'd clipped out all the exact words. I haven't been able to find it since. But as you know, there weren't that many books prior to that. And of course, that was the first printed book. But
the only books you had prior to that were, say, monks who copied them out in longhand in the Abbey.
Exactly. But by the end of that century, by the end of the 15th century, there were something like 2 million books in print.
Wow.
In like 50 years or 40-something years that they had already, somebody, you know, through
and, the proliferation. And Borders had started by then, right?
Exactly. No, yeah. it was Barnes & Noble.
Was it Barnes & Noble?
Barnes
&
Noble, they were
out
there. Joan, The housing industry, the mortgage industry, which is part of the housing industry, was worthy of a front page mention this time.
Boy, there's so much talk about it. You know, you talk about frightened people and panicked people. You see a lot of panicked headlines about this, and we call it the mortgage mess.
Well, you know, Joan, the frantic and frightened people are the people who write the headlines.
I think so.
And the people who are the talking heads on the television, who are trying to fill up 24 hours of news and have nothing else to talk about.
Right.
Because this is not, I won't quote Shakespeare All right, let me put this way. I want to attribute Shakespeare title to this, Much Ado About Nothing. There is something there, but it's not a lot to do about nothing.
Well, it's a problem that has to be fixed, certainly, but it's not going to bring down the economy, as
exactly.
I think some people are afraid.
But you and I both have heard the hand-wringers about that, haven't we?
Yes, but see, that's why if people would just read our newsletter, they would get the real story.
That's exactly right, because you guys go on to say...
Well, we say that the talk of crisis is way overblown, and what we're talking about is what is known as what they call subprime mortgages, which are mortgages that were made to people who really didn't have the proper credit for it.
Sometimes no income and no down payment.
Right. Right. And these people, because they didn't qualify for a conventional mortgage, had to take out ARMs, adjustable rate mortgages.
Right.
And in the interest rate environment we're in now, those ARMs have gone up quite a bit. And some may have come with what they call a balloon payment, where you have maybe a relatively low rate for a few years, and then it skyrockets after that. And a lot of these people aren't able to keep making the payments anymore. So there are a lot of foreclosures. Foreclosures are going up. But it's still only a very small percentage of the total mortgage market.
I heard someone say the other day that if all subprime loans were in default, which they all aren't, and if all of those went into foreclosure, which they won't,
right,
100% of that would amount to less than 1% of all mortgages.
See, right.
So why? But this is what the reason I think it's important to point this out, Joan. It is instructive on more than one level, on the basis of the facts of the issue, but also to point out that when you watch the news media, the 24-hour news cycles, you really have to be careful because and I'll give you a perfect example, Joan. The judge deciding to order a DNA test for the alleged fathers of the of Anna Nicole.
Oh, please
Anna
don't
Nicole's
say it.
Baby.
Oh, you said it. I can't believe you said that on
well,
your show.
Well, no, what I'm saying is, no, this isn't a Brittany and Anna Nicole free zone, Joan. But unless it proves a point, which is that's not breaking news, ladies and gentlemen.
Right.
The judge ordering the DNA test is not breaking news, yet it was, according to all of the different channels. So, and neither is the house, the subprime lending mortgage meltdown, going to take the economy down. Don't let people tell you that. Don't let them talk us into a recession. 20 after, we'll be right back. See there, I said Anna Nicole and recession, Joan, in one segment. Never been done before. 20 after. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, we're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you very much for checking it out and for using it to your advantage and for letting it help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter, by the way, when you get there. Joan is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, just to wrap up a little bit on this mortgage thing.
Yes.
The subprime mortgage meltdown, which and it is in that sector, Joan. I think it does qualify as a meltdown.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Because you got what I guess you could call a margin call or some company, I forgot the name of it, that has to come up with $10 billion and they don't have anywhere close to that and won't be able to raise that, so they're basically going to go bankrupt. And about a few days ago, they were delisted from the stock market, and so that's a pretty good sized meltdown. But one of the things that Bill Dunkelberg pointed out to us yesterday on the show, Joan, was that with the securitization of mortgages,
right,
where a bank makes a mortgage, rolls it up to upstream to a consolidator, who then puts it out as a security, that then goes out over thousands or hundreds at least of different funds across the world. All of that risk is spread out over the globe, not in one little town's bank.
That's right.
So it's going to be, it's not even going to be a ripple, Joan, I don't think, ultimately. But here's, there is one issue there, and you guys point this out, I think, and that it could be some areas, especially those areas where a lot of the subprime lending was done, it could create some, if there are pockets of foreclosures, and, you know, maybe one area where a plant closes down or something and a lot of people get laid off or whatever, that there could be some pricing adjustments on housing.
That's right. And there could, we say that there would be a, maybe a little bit of bruised confidence in the economy. And, you know, as banks have to take restatements on their earnings, that could kind of have a small ripple effect into the market.
But see, I don't think banks will be doing that because they've already, because I tell you, banks, for every mortgage, for every 100 mortgages that they, and every bank now has a mortgage arm.
Yes.
For every one of those that they create, 98% of them go upstream to these securities.
That's true. That's
to these mortgage-backed securities. And
right.
So I mean, it's just going to be. However, Joan, here's the thing. Whenever there's something like this, there's always opportunity.
Yes.
This might be a good time to look around for foreclosures.
Ah, see.
To buy foreclosures, right?
Yeah, right. That's right.
And, Joan, one of the things over on page two you guys point out, I want to connect these two together before we move on, that God forbid, although you guys say that they may, politicians will get involved in this. We don't need them solving this problem because they won't solve it. Like,
well,
we don't,
I don't think they're going to try.
Need
I think
them
they're
creating
just going to hold hearings and yell about it a little bit.
We don't need a mortgage or Sarbanes-Oxley, Joan.
Well, I don't think there's any plan for that.
Yeah.
Do you?
But you know they're going to get involved, right?
Well, I mean, to the extent that we say here, yeah. But we don't talk about any legislation here.
Right. Well, you guys point out that they start raising a fuss about it's going to hit the low income folks harder and calls for aid to strapped mortgage payers. But you say it won't happen, but they still will call for it.
Yeah.
I still think there'll be a lot of, just don't get excited, folks. as he gets excited.
Don't you start frightening as people.
Exactly. I'm starting to frighten people.
Yeah.
Joan, another thing that some people thought, and this made me mad too. Some of these talking heads said, well, maybe as a reaction to all these subprime loans melting down, that maybe the Fed will lower rates. Well, you know what? The short-term rates are not the problem, is it? I mean, the long-term rates are still low, aren't they?
That's right.
And so, but speaking of the Fed, they didn't do any such thing. They did what I predicted that they would do. They didn't change rates.
Didn't go either way.
Yeah.
But they had a bias toward raising rates, and they got rid of that bias.
Is that, did they say neutral yesterday? They go neutral?
I thought that's what I read, yes. And so that's making people hope for interest rate reductions the next time around. But that's not assured either.
No. Absolutely. Well, anyway, so the Fed didn't do anything except that they made some language adjustments. And Joan, speaking of the economy, Kiplinger this week made an adjustment in their forecast for the overall GDP. Tell us about that.
Yes, we did. The new forecast is GDP rising at a 2.5% rate for the year. Now, I believe that's a little bit lower than we had forecast. Is that right?
I'm a little confused about that.
Oh yeah.
Well, hadn't you guys always said 2.5, or had you said 2%? What was it?
Well, I'd have to go back to my old forecast.
So you're actually revising your GDP forecast upward?
I can do that online as we speak.
No, but I mean, is that what you're saying? You're saying the Kiplinger thinks GDP is going to actually increase over the year?
Well, we say 2.5% for the year. Is that not what that means?
Well, you got the arrow that goes up there on your little table there.
Right.
So okay, I guess that's what it means.
I mean, it doesn't mean it's going down 2.5%.
But you're still off by a half a point, Joan.
Oh, well, of course.
Because I predicted it's going to be 3%. I still think it will be. I'm bullish on the economy, ladies and gentlemen. Very bullish. And I think you are, too, because you're out there making it happen. 29 after, we're going to come back and talk about several other issues that are in the news these days with our good friend Joan Pride. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Mr. Gracious, Mr. Humble, at your service. Always a pleasure. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. And if you've been listening already, we consider that a sign of high intelligence, don't we, Joan?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger.
Questionable judgment, but high intelligence.
And, folks, Joan, one of the things that we need to talk to the folks about is something new that you guys point out. They need to get prepared for this, and that's what's happening in the travel industry, the tourism industry.
That's right.
What's the news?
Well, the news is that actually there's some good news for if you're in the tourism industry. What I'm saying is good news. If you're not, it's not good news, because vacationers are going to get higher prices. And a lot of this has to do with the weaker dollar. And I guess you want me to talk about this because I'm the big currency.
You're our currency guru, exactly. But it's not just those that are going overseas, though.
Well, that's right, because U.S. hotels are raising prices, too. We're saying up 6%, and also prices for airline tickets up 5%.
And the reason is because of the new demand, right?
The new demand, and I would think, we do say here gas prices
gas
are high,
isn't
too.
Helping any. By the way, you know petroleum gas prices go, oil prices just went down, Joan, but gas prices haven't gone down.
Of course.
Another thing to be ticked off about.
Of course.
But, Joan, no, the record season, you guys say, there's a record season coming up, and apparently the industry gets that. They understand that they got maybe advanced bookings or something like that, and they're starting to raise their prices. You know what? If you and I were, you know, if in the businesses that we're in, if we thought we could raise our prices, we'd raise our prices.
Sure, pricing power.
That's exactly right. You know, Joan, here's an interesting thing that I'd like to stick in here.
Yeah.
About the travel industry and about the vacation industry. One of my Brain Trust members was telling me recently, he's been doing some work with one of the large hotel chains, one of the large hotel franchises, mm-hmm. and he's identified he identified to me that this particular company has split their company into two sectors. One of them, or two groups. One of them is the hospitality industry, their hotels,
uh-huh.
And the other is the owner division, meaning people who buy timeshares, things like a timeshare, where they actually invest in and own properties that this company manages.
Okay.
And right now, it's 80% hospitality, 20% ownership.
Now, that's interesting. That surprises me.
That it would be that high?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? He says he thinks the 20% has a bullet.
Wow.
Because what he's seeing is that the companies are putting some of the best and the brightest new people they're hiring in that division. And the company, the CEO told him that the company expected that number to invert one day, where they would have more ownership and less hospitality.
Oh.
So that's an interesting thing that's happening out there in the vacation industry.
Yeah.
Is that more people are interested in buying timeshares, which tells me that people are thinking, well, I'm going to be taking vacations for a long time.
That's right.
So that's kind of an interesting thing. Joan, let's move on down and talk about the auto industry. What's news there?
Well, this item is about hybrid vehicles. We're saying that they're just a great thing for auto manufacturers. They bring in profit, and they're great PR because they're green. And
Well, you can get them in different colors, but tell us what you mean by green, Joe.
Environmentally correct.
Yes. Is that EC? Is that what we have to call it now?
I get. Oh, instead of PC, EC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about that? Did we just coin a phrase, Joan?
Oh no.
And an acronym.
I can't. We better trademark.
I can't believe that I've given aid and comfort to the high priest of EC, Mr. Al Gore.
That's right. What's the matter with you? You're turning green.
I know.
In more ways than one, right?
But Joan, would you buy a hybrid car?
Well, I don't see why not.
I know you're like your muscle cars, Joan. And you're going to have to turn in your jet, Joan, because you're burning too much fuel.
Oh, okay.
Your footprint is getting way out of hand, Joan, your carbon footprint.
I'm sorry.
But would you buy a hybrid car?
I don't see why not.
I might.
Yeah?
Is that surprising?
You? You, the anti-global warming guy?
Yeah, me.
Wow.
No, Joan. I'm not anti-global.
I thought I could slip that by
I'm not anti-global warming. I'm anti-screwing up the economy to meet some kind of ridiculous goals that the wacko global warming people want us to do.
Oh, well, that's a fine line there.
I'm anti that.
It's very nuanced.
Yeah, exactly. But the, you know, I'll be honest with you, Joan, I'm excited about where we're going with these automobiles because I want us to get independent of the other oil. I want to get independent of Chavez's oil and Russia's oil and Saudi Arabia's oil. I want to not have to depend on those guys. That's what I like about hybrids. 20 tails. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Money, two for the show, three to get ready. Now go, cat, go, but don't you step on my blue suede shoe. You can do
we're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Joan Price, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And, of course, as you know, folks, I always like telling you about Kiplinger's website, Kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R.com, because that's where you can go not only to find all the free stuff that they offer on their homepage and around that area, but also how you can find their publications, like the letter that Joan and I work off of, the Kiplinger letter that's now in its 84th year in business.
I believe so.
Yeah, 23.
Started in 1923.
Joan was almost an original employee, and I was almost an original subscriber.
Careful.
And that's the weekly publication. Then the three biweeklies, the California letter, a tax letter, and the agriculture letter. By the way, if you're not in California, you can still order the California letter.
You bet.
If you're not in agriculture,
you can order the
agriculture letter.
That's right.
And even if you hate taxes, they'll let you have the tax letter.
Absolutely.
But we're very
generous that way.
And then they got this magazine thing going on.
That's right. Our monthly magazine is Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And I bet they got a phone number, too.
They sure do. It's a toll-free number, 800-544-0155.
And be sure to ask for the Jim Blasingame 30-day free trial. Honest, folks, they'll give it to you. All you got to do is ask.
But they won't hang up on you.
That's right, probably. Hey, Joan, let's move over and talk about what you guys report as maybe the most powerful senator in the Senate, and he might not be a Democrat.
That's right. In fact, he's not a Democrat.
Wonder how Mr. Reid feels about this.
I know. Who we're talking about is Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, who is the minority leader, a Republican. And we say he's adept at just saying no.
What does that mean?
Well, it means he's blocking. He's powerful enough to be able to block a lot of what the Democrats are trying to do in the Senate.
Which means all he's got to do is get 40 votes.
Well, that's true. Well, you know, we don't want to overinflate his power, but that's true because of the Senate rules, which I believe Mr. McConnell and the other Republicans tried to change a couple of years ago and failed to do so.
Yeah.
They're probably breathing a sigh of relief that they failed to do so. And by that, I mean they were trying to get rid of this 60-vote supermajority that you basically have to get anything controversial through
so
the
you're
Senate.
Saying that maybe they're saying now, thank you, Lord, for not answering all of our prayers.
I think they have to be. I think so.
Well, you know, there's one interesting thing that people can start looking for to be coming up. And even though this is a little bit of a regional issue, in a lot of ways it's going to be national news. I think it actually might be qualified a little bit for breaking news, Joan. And that is the Tennessee Valley Authority is the only public, you know, regional public utility that I know of, at least of that size. And it was created, of course, in the 30s by Franklin Roosevelt as part of the New Deal. But it is a government utility that generates and distributes electricity. But doesn't go retailing. They go out to the city municipalities and the co-ops across several states there in the southeast.
Mm-hmm.
But Mr. McConnell, who's from Kentucky, and at least one other senator, I've forgotten who, wants to privatize TVA.
Wow. Interesting.
Well, and the reason why I bring this up is because the debate's going to be about whether this is going to be a good thing for that region. And because where other public utilities have gone private, and the market has been made to be wide open, it hasn't necessarily lowered costs. In most cases, it's raised costs.
Right.
The competition hasn't worked out as they thought. So anyway, I'm just letting folks know, be prepared. You guys point him out this week, and I want you to know he's going to be in the middle, and you'll be able to see what kind of power he has. This will be another example of whether he really has any power, and there's going to be a pretty big debate on this. And even though it's just in the Southeast where the Tennessee Valley Authority is, it'll be a national debate. That'll be an interesting thing, Joan. And okay. you heard that first here, right on
the Small Business Advocate Show. We hear everything here first. That's right.
Exactly right, Joan. What about some of the new disability, some of the new regulations on access for the disabled?
Well, and I think this would definitely have an impact on your listeners. And in another beautiful turn of phrase, we say there's going to be a bevy of rules on access for the disabled. And, of course, we're referring to the Americans with Disabilities Act. And I don't think people who have existing buildings need to worry so much, but it's if you're going to build a building, you know, this is going to have to affect you. This is interesting. Lower light switches, bigger bathroom stalls, more reserved parking, I guess, for handicapped parking spots. Your service counters have to be modified to accommodate the disabled, and more entrances for them as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, Joan, I was going into a restaurant yesterday, and I saw some people pull into. Actually, they committed a crime, misdemeanor, I guess, a traffic violation, I should say, to get into this
handicapped
parking space. And then all three of the people. Now they had a handicapped card, but all three of the people in the car hopped out and crisply walked up to the restaurant.
Well, and you know, another problem is these handicap stickers, I think, are given out like candy in a lot of situations.
That's my point.
That's a big problem.
I actually have done this before. I didn't yesterday, but I have gone up to the people and said, how are you handicapped? Because in this particular place, there's only one handicapped parking space. So some little old lady who really was handicapped, or some gentleman who's in a wheelchair, you know, and everything needed that, he would have been in trouble.
That's right.
So it kind of ticks me off. But the point that you're making here, folks, that they're making here, not only new buildings, but renovations. So if you're renovating a building or apartments or anything like that, you better be careful. You better pay attention to the new regulations on the Americans for Disabilities Act. All you contractors out there, pay attention to that. 10 till, I'm Jim Blasingame. We'll be right back with Joan Pryde. But Joan, if you've done your job, if you've done what you're supposed to do, if you've got everybody's I-9s, you've asked everyone for their credentials, their citizenship records, you've made the due diligence, you've conducted the proper due diligence to make sure that everybody who works for you is not an illegal alien. Then what do you got to worry about? Let them come in. Let them rock and roll.
Well, and you bring up probably one of the most important points of all of this. The employer can only do so much. They have a duty to, and I'm quoting here, ensure that the documents you're shown reasonably appear to be genuine. You have no responsibility to, you know, say go to the Social Security Administration and check up on the person. And there are people in Congress that would want to impose that restriction on businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And the business community is very concerned about this. I mean, I think it would be a nightmare, not just for businesses, but even the Social Security Administration itself admits that to try to handle all these requests for verification, it would be, they'd need years to get ready for that.
Well, and of course, there are many, many people out there in the agriculture business. We were talking about our farmers earlier in the hour, the agriculture business.
Mm-hmm.
The people who are in the construction industry, people who are doing landscaping. Lots and lots of folks out there who employ dozens, if not scores, if not hundreds, of people, of Hispanic people. Not, and of course, they aren't the only, but they're the predominant ones that are illegal aliens. But these are people, and so if you got all these people, you're just gonna have to take the time to do, you know, or if you're looking the other way, you know, just be prepared for what happens when they raid you.
That's right.
And so that's just one of those things.
Right.
But there is going to be, you say that there may be an increase in that. So just, you know.
Well, I think your listeners and others have to get out there and tell their congressman how they feel about this. We'll certainly report about it if there are proposals like this. But, you know, those would be really tough for any reasonable employer to handle. And they need to let Congress know that it's just too much of a burden.
Well, you also point out that some of the things that I was just saying, that make sure you do the due diligence in the letter here.
Get
the I-9 form going, and also there's a website that is too long to give out, but we can get them started, Joan. Go to uscis.gov, and could they search for native documents or something like that? Would that be I don't want to give out this long website. It's too long. But uscis.gov, and look for native documents. See if that doesn't give you.
You could probably put that in the search function.
Search,
and bring
yeah.
it up that way. And there's an M. It says M-274. I wonder if that's the number of a document or something like that.
So if you want to find out more about what's going on there, folks, and some of the things that you can do to make sure that you're in compliance as much as possible. Maybe you'd even have that on hand when somebody, you know, you might even need, if somebody slips through the cracks, if you're hiring folks who might be illegal and you're doing your best, you might even have some of this documentation on hand if you're ever approached by any of these auditors and say, look, I've done everything I can do. This person you say is illegal, here's what they told me, and have all your records there.
That's right.
Prospects for new immigration law, Joan, are they getting better or not?
Well, we say that they're improving, and Congress is going to get serious about a large guest worker program. Now, Senators McCain and Kennedy are working together on this, but we say that it's still got a long way to go. And the key thing here, I think, is that President Bush does support this.
The only thing that makes me more frightened
of Kennedy
working on a project by himself is when he joins forces with McCain. That's dangerous, Joan. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here today. Good job, as always.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time.
Sounds great.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and as you know, this program is for you. And one more thing, always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.